It's popular in oils, vapes, even food. But are all CBD products alike? Good morning. We're live from Studio 5. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for listening. Just ahead on the show this morning, we'll tell you what the FDA is saying about CBD as we talk all things cannabis with our regular cannabis contributors. Give us a call right now. It's 549-2937. Hey, you might need a little CBD to de-stress this Thanksgiving holiday, right? It's timely. Then later, speaking of the holidays, we're unveiling our team's picks for the best local holiday gifts ever across the First Coast. This is just in time for Small Business Saturday. That's coming up. But first this morning, the government is weighing in on the popularity of CBD. This week, the FDA issued warning letters to 15 companies for illegally selling products containing cannabidiol. That's CBD. They say that the firms are violating the Federal Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. The FDA also published a revised consumer update detailing safety concerns they say they have about CBD products. So how they'll regulate CBD is very much an open question right now, given that this product is available virtually everywhere in a variety of forms, tinctures, creams, oils, food. People use it to treat everything from sleeplessness to pain to depression and more. So we decided to start the show off with an update on this and find out what's going on with the cannabis legalization movement in Florida as well, as we welcome attorney Sally Kent Peebles and cannabis columnist Shelton Hull. Sally and Shelton, always good to have you on the show. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And we're already getting your calls about CBD and cannabis. What are your questions? It's 549-2937. Give us a call, 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect at wjct.org. Tweets to at Melissa Injax. Let's begin with our cannabis attorney, Sally Kent Peebles. You also serve on a state advisory board around this product. What are your initial thoughts about the FDA's statement yesterday on CBD?
So it's quite significant. So back in December of 2018, the federal government passed the 2018 Farm Bill, which essentially legalized hemp at the federal level. However, it did say in the bill that the FDA would maintain regulatory oversight over the cannabinoids within the plant, including CBD. And their current stance is that CBD cannot be placed in a consumable product. And that has always been their stance. We see these products everywhere, and that's because the FDA really doesn't have the money to go out and enforce and shut down these hundreds of companies. Well, but up until now, even though that was their stance, they have only really focused their enforcement against companies making egregious health claims, which they see as really focused on the most vulnerable patients. For example, saying, you know, this product will cure cancer. They would they would go after those types of companies. But this new letter that they sent really is significant because they're making it clear that it is currently illegal to market CBD by adding it to a food or labeling it as a dietary supplement.
Okay. But Shelton Hull, that's not stopping companies from doing it.
No, the ship has already kind of sailed on that. During this whole medical marijuana situation that's been, and the legalization efforts that are happening across the country, the federal government has generally taken kind of a hands-off approach, kind of letting the states and municipalities settle these things for themselves. But in the last few months, they've kind of come back around and began to exercise a little more oversight. And I think a lot of it was the vaping situation. It kind of caught them sitting on their hands.
Concerns about the safety of vaping the product.
Yes, and that sort of showed the government, well, okay, we haven't really been paying as much attention to this, and now there's this flood of products all over the country.
So what should the consumer do, Sally? They're interested in the product. They're buying the product already for a variety of reasons.
So as a consumer, you want to make sure that these products have been tested and that the test results are on the label. The problem with that is in Florida, we while we have the hemp bill and the hemp regulations, they haven't been passed in their final form yet. So people in Florida, the people who are making these products, aren't held to any state regulations right now. Mm-hmm. So really, I would advise people to refrain from purchasing CBD off the shelves right now until the state has got their regulations in place and enforcement isn't started.
The state agriculture commissioner, Nikki Fried, is working on that. She's also a big advocate of growing Florida's hemp program, which uses CBD. How will this FDA letter, this opinion, affect Florida's hemp industry, do you think?
Well, right now, about a month ago, the USDA issued their hemp rules to implement the 2018 Farm Bill. And Florida passed a hemp bill that earlier this year, which they have some draft rules in place right now. And Nikki Fried and the rest of the Department of Ag is busy revising those rules to be in line with the USDA rules. How the FDA will affect that, it really won't. What we need to do is wait for the FDA to provide a pathway for these products to be regulated in the future. Until then, Florida will probably operate and have their own stamp of approval on products, and even in light of what the FDA is saying.
We'll go to your calls on CBD and cannabis news in a moment. It's 549-2937. So Shelton Hull, how do you think all of this affects the push in Florida to legalize cannabis for recreational use? There are a few petition drives out there trying to get that on the ballot, and there's also a new group that's opposing it.
Yes, I'm surprised that these guys emerged out of nowhere. They may be computer simulations. There's no way to tell. As far as the push here in Florida, I don't think the FDA ruling will have much effect. Floridians aren't very fond of the federal government. We're not prone to really pay much attention to what they say. I think what will happen as a result of this and the vaping thing is it just brings more attention to the subject. It brings more attention to the fact that we haven't gone as far as we could have in terms of regulating it, in terms of getting this product out there so that consumers can have safe access to it. As far as the legalization goes, it's still unclear. These two groups are kind of, they seem to spend as much time going after each other as they do pushing their own petition. Mm-hmm. And both groups are still very far behind on the 766,000 signatures they need by February 1st. And so it remains to be seen. Why this new group is coming along to oppose them, I don't know. I assume it's a tax write-off. Maybe it's a replay of what Sheldon Adelson did here to block medical marijuana back in 2014.
Right. There were efforts to block it, but eventually it did pass. You can now access cannabis for medical use in Florida, Sally. And we learned recently that when it comes to patients in Florida curing what ails them through cannabis, the flower is very popular. There was a push to ban smokable marijuana for patients treating their illnesses, but they're using it. They like the flower.
Absolutely. Originally, the Department of Health's rules banned the use of flower, but there was a lawsuit that overturned that. And so patients in Florida have been able to access flower. And the reason that patients really buy that in a higher droves, for three main reasons. We have the cost. You know, it tends to be a lower cost for patients. You can buy a gram or two for about $25 or $30, while a vape pen cartridge can be $45. A gram of oil can be $80. Also, smoking flower is what patients are accustomed to. People just like to smoke weed. It's the form they're accustomed to prior to legalization, and it's easy to titrate. And then the third is really quality control, which goes to the vape pen scares. Patients can evaluate the quality of flower easier than they can evaluate the quality of an oil just by looking at it.
Yeah, and there are so many questions. This is such a big topic with so many pieces to discuss. So we want your calls right now as we talk cannabis and CBD on the show with our cannabis contributors, attorney Sally Kent Peebles and columnist Shelton Hull. What are your questions? 549-2937. PJ is in St. Augustine. Hey, PJ. Good morning.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing well, thanks. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, I've got a couple of comments, I guess, questions. I know the Israeli government actually prescribes CBD for their soldiers, and they've done a lot of studies there. as well as Germany and a lot of other countries around this. It's my understanding that the WHO, the World Health Organization, is looking to also remove cannabis from a Schedule I drug in this upcoming year. And they actually proposed to do it this year. It seems to me that the FDA is purposefully dragging their feet here, and I'm curious to get a perspective as to why that might be the case, particularly when other nations are moving forward in this direction.
Okay, thanks, PJ. Sheldon Hall, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, I mean, you know, anything the Israeli government does is just fantastic, first and foremost. I think with the FDA dragging their feet, I would assume that's just kind of a holdover from the old days, going back to the Tax Act of 1937. A lot of these stereotypes we just had, for example, Joe Biden referencing the gateway drug argument, which is something that was disproven decades ago, but some of this old thinking still lingers. And when you talk about the FDA or really any regulatory body in this country, you have to talk about the billions of dollars in lobbyists and special interest money that floods into these organizations, and they have their own agenda too, whether that's big tobacco or alcohol, big pharma. And then, of course, we must give them some credit. There may be just an abundance of caution, especially after the vape situation kind of made them, it kind of embarrassed them, I think. So they're going to be a little more studious and careful as they proceed along with this process.
And so how do you see that playing out in Florida, Sally Kent Peebles, particularly as the 2020 state legislative session kicks off in January, and they'll be looking at these issues around cannabis?
So to be clear, the caller was asking about legalization of marijuana. Mm-hmm. So the FDA is not weighing in on marijuana. They're weighing in on CBD from hemp. So it's two separate issues. But legalization in Florida, I as Shelton mentioned, the signatures are very low right now. I'm not sure if either of those are going to move forward. I'm very hopeful that Regulate Florida and MILF will move forward, but I'm not sure they will.
Well, what do you think about all this? Give us a call on this day before Thanksgiving as we talk about cannabis on the show, 549-2937. Curtis is on the north side. Hi, Curtis.
Good morning, everyone. How y'all doing?
Doing great, thanks.
I have a question. My question is, with the concealed weapon permit and also the legalization of marijuana, will the two conflict each other? I've called the sheriff's office. They said they referred me to the agriculture. I called them. I can't get through to anyone. So I'm just wondering, could y'all answer that question for me?
Well, that's a great question. Yeah, okay. As I mentioned, there are a lot of tentacles to this topic. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting one from Curtis on the north side. Shelton Hall, carrying a concealed weapon permit and having a card to purchase cannabis.
Well, I mean, as long as you can rap, it should be okay. There's some conflict and controversy on this subject, and I haven't pursued either myself, but I've heard sort of contradictory statements from people. I've had some people say that they have the card and they have the concealed weapons permit. Of course, we have groups like Weed for Warriors, Buds for Vets, who are providing access to medical marijuana for our veterans communities. And a lot of people have said that they don't want to get a medical card, in part because it could interfere with their ability to get a concealed weapons permit. And vice versa. I've heard some people say that if you were going to do it, that it's better to get the gun permit first and then apply for the marijuana license. Because if you do it the other way around, the sort of background check process for the concealed weapons permit is much more stringent. So that would be tripped if you went about it from that direction.
Sally.
So when you apply for, my understanding of this is when you apply for a firearm, I have not done so, but there's a form you fill out and you have to answer, check a box there that says whether or not you're a medical marijuana patient. And that's a federal question. So it's not a state issue. And therefore, if you have both, you most likely lied on that form, and that's a personal decision that people are making. Hmm. But it's not really a state issue.
It speaks
and that
though,
would
to
be a felony.
Okay, and that would be a felony. It's 549-2937 as we talk about cannabis on this show. Where do you stand on the legalization of marijuana in Florida for recreational use? We're talking about that and other issues with attorney Sally Kent Peebles and columnist Shelton Hall. His call about a concealed weapon permit, dealing with the sheriff's office and dealing and also wanting to access medical marijuana. Let's talk about how law enforcement handles these issues, Sally, because certainly, you know, the police over the years put a lot of people in jail for possession of small amounts of marijuana. Mm-hmm. Increasingly, the public and law enforcement sees that as not productive and, in fact, counterproductive to criminal justice reform efforts. But the police still have to enforce the laws as they stand. And so do you talk at all with law enforcement leadership about these issues? And what are they saying to you?
Very interesting. I actually did speak to a sheriff's department this last week, and they reached out to me because I thought it was very proactive of them. They had been watching the adult use campaigns go, in the news, and they want to be proactive, and they want to be prepared for what issues they may be confronted with. For example, if they pull someone over and they have marijuana in the car, you know, how do they know if that's from a dispensary or if that's from the black market? When they test someone for driving, you know, what type of machinery are they going to need to have accurate test results to see if they're driving while impaired? That machine doesn't exist yet. But mm-hmm. those are the types of questions. But I thought it was very telling that there is a sheriff's department in Florida that is preparing for that hopeful eventual situation.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, when you talk to police, they'll say, you know, that there are a lot of things we'd rather be focused on than arresting and charging someone for a small amount of marijuana possession.
Absolutely. I mean, going back to when this push sort of began in the late 80s, early 90s, law enforcement, in particular retired law enforcement, have always been sort of a not pro-cannabis, but pro-decriminalization because of the amount of money that's saved for law enforcement, bed space saved in the jails, and just safety for officers. The last couple of years have been awful for officers dying on the job. And what we're seeing with this situation is it's another example of how government, with our overlapping local, state, and federal laws, creates a very difficult situation for law enforcement because they, you know, and most of them now are just erring on the side of, you know, not worrying about it unless there's some other egregious offense going on connected to the cannabis. And we have organizations around, for example, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, which is a network of retired officers, retired sheriffs, headed by Jim Manfrey, and they're out there vigorously advocating for it. And it's always been sort of speculated that if it were left entirely up to the police, you know, decriminalization would have happened a long time ago.
Paul is on the South Side. Hi, Paul. Thanks for your call. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks. My question is there any insight to how employers are adapting to this relatively new law and policy? Because I'm a card-carrying medical marijuana user, and I'm currently interviewing for new employment. I obviously can't pass a drug screen. Should I bring that up in these interviews?
Right. You know. Yeah, that's a great question, and that's come up a lot, Paul, when we talk about this. Lots of folks out there in your situation, so thank you for that, Paul. Sally, what should Paul do?
So unfortunately, in the amendment, the Medical Marijuana Florida amendment, they did carve out the right for a private employer to discriminate towards their employees and institute whatever drug-free policy they want. So there's not much hope today for him. However, on the 2020 proposed legislation list, there is an Employee Protection Act being proposed. It will allow employees to kind of turn a blind eye, and it'll allow any employees that are fired for using marijuana to have a discrimination case against them. So this is good news around the quarter. There is an exception for this for workers in safety-sensitive jobs, such as operating machinery, firefighters, driving, carrying firearms, and caring for children. So those people will not be able to take advantage of that act.
Should he tell his potential future employer the truth and just say, look, I use medical marijuana, and if you drug test me, it will show up. And this is why I'm using it.
I think if he did that, there's a high chance that he would not be hired for the job.
Wow. So yes. should he just refuse the drug test then? What choices does he have?
I don't think I can give legal advice on that. But, you know, I don't know what the employee's drug policy is. So.
It depends on the employer, in other words.
Yeah. I mean, if you're working on public radio, it should be all right. I think that you have to tell your employer in every...
I don't know about that. They drug tested us here. But go ahead.
Oh, well, listener supported. I think you have to tell your boss because, of course, it depends on the job you're applying for, you know, most things such as, you know, the service industry, things like that, it won't be that much of a problem. Some industries, you know, you're working with heavy equipment or you're working in a hospital or you're law enforcement or something, that would be more of an issue. But if you lied about it on your application and that was found out later, you're automatically gone. And depending on what job you're actually working in, it could actually be a crime to lie about that on your application.
Let's go to some tweets. Here's one from a listener. Paula says, now that vitamin E acetate has been identified as the culprit in the matter of vaping deaths, we should be able to move ahead with getting cannabis legalized and regulated.
Yep.
What about that?
I think that's true. For when the vaping crisis first happened, you know, the government was kind of, you know, caught unawares and we didn't know for weeks and weeks whether it was tobacco, whether it was cannabis, whether it was the hardware or the ingredients in it. And, you know, credit to the government, like, you know, careful, diligent effort, they were able to isolate what the cause of this situation was and some of the companies involved in it. And so now everyone can move forward in a much safer manner.
Jay tweets the show, if they legalize marijuana for recreational use, all those locked up for pot or who have convictions need to be released and have their records cleared. Sally Kent Peebles, that's been a popular rallying cry for those advocating for criminal justice reform around this issue, mm-hmm. but is it likely?
I think we've seen in other states when that have been legalized that there have been efforts to do that following the legalization. I think this is a good time to bring up the MORE Act that is very substantial news. Marijuana is still illegal at the federal level, as we know. And last week, the MORE Act passed through a congressional committee, and that's the first time a marijuana legalization bill has ever passed through a congressional committee. And part of that bill does require federal courts to expunge prior convictions for cannabis offenses. So that would be a massive expungement at a national level. It also decriminalizes marijuana at the federal level by removing marijuana from the Controlled Substances Act entirely, just like the Farm Bill did for hemp, and it establishes a 5% federal tax.
Brad at the Beaches. Hey, Brad, good morning.
Hey, good morning. I heard one of the panelists comment about jobs where you could or couldn't use medical marijuana. As I understand it, the fire department in Boston was the first one to allow their members to legally use medical marijuana for PTSD. And another really point they wanted to make was to keep their members who are injured from having to get on opioids. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you talk about first, hopefully the MORE Act will pass also, but there's a first.
Huh. Okay. Thanks for that, Brad. I hadn't heard of that.
Me neither. You know, Boston has always led the way in so many areas in the history of our country. You know, the decriminalization and the expungement of records kind of overlap, but they also go on kind of a parallel track because the drug war has been the backbone of mass incarceration for all of our lifetimes, and hundreds of thousands of people are locked up right now, and millions more are sitting around with various convictions that undermine their ability to get a job, you know, child custody cases, you know, getting leases on apartments, getting loans for homes or businesses. All of this is affected by that. I think one thing that could happen in 2020, I don't know whether this is going to, decriminalization will get on the ballot, but between the governor's kind of wait and see policy towards all this, and of course the president has already made clear that if a bill like this was put in front of him, he would consider signing it. With 2020 being such a big election year and Florida being a battleground state, I could see potentially the governor or even on the federal level some type of maneuver to push this through just to eliminate something that would bring a lot of liberals and progressives to the polls.
You know, Sally, it really is remarkable how this is the one issue that unites people across the political spectrum. Majorities, clear majorities of Floridians, Democrats, Republicans, and independents all support full legalization. And a Pew survey around the country finds much the same. The majority of Americans are okay with this drug being legalized, taxed, and regulated. That said, it's not necessarily a given that that's what we're going to see right away, even though a number of states have legalized.
Absolutely. The Pew survey was very telling. Two-thirds of Americans support legalization. And I loved seeing that only 8% of the population don't support either medical or adult use. Republicans and Democrats at the 55-78, that was telling to me because I find that more and more Republicans are supportive of this issue, which is I found when moving to Florida from Colorado, where I've been faced with a lot more Republicans. And that was refreshing. So that was sad to see that stat. But I do think that more and more Americans believe in reasonable drug laws. They've seen that legalization works. It creates jobs. It creates tax revenues. Colorado just surpassed $1 billion of tax revenues this past summer. It diminishes the black market. It decreases crime. It decreases teen use. And, you know, people often speak to me about their concerns with children using marijuana and that legalization is going to spur even more use of that. But really, if that's one of your concerns, legalization is something you should get behind mm-hmm. because regulating marijuana takes it off the streets and it disincentivizes the black market. And it places it in a retail store instead of on the streets where a person can't access it without an ID. And when they do access it, it's tested. It just makes sense. So I think that more and more Americans are becoming rational.
Now, all of those arguments are compelling, and they've certainly been successful in moving public attitudes. But let me just play devil's advocate for a moment and talk about some of the issues that states that have legalized have been dealing with, particularly regulating the product, dealing with rogue actors that don't mm-hmm. go through the regulatory process. It hasn't always been perfect. Mm-hmm. So what's your response to those who oppose this big societal change? And they point to the negatives that they're hearing about in legal states.
Well, the negatives are compelling, you know, themselves. You know, a lot of listeners may be surprised to know that our laws do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the people being governed.
But amazing, isn't it?
it's shocking. But in this case, I think we've seen through slowly implementing it, and I like that it's been done state by state because every state has their own values, their own priorities. So we've been able to kind of gradually integrate this into the marketplace, and we're seeing good results. Now, the folks who would point to the various negatives about the idea of legalization, I would only say to them that I hope their points against it are different than the points that were being used 10 years ago or 20 years ago or 50 years ago or 100 years ago, because all of that has been disproven. So they need mm-hmm. new propaganda. Now, the most compelling argument against it, you know, that I hear from conservatives is simply that it increases the liberalization of society. It brings people together. It transcends racial bonds. It transcends, like, you know, political bonds. And if you're talking about political power, that is, you don't want to give the other side anything that's going to bring them together. That's why we pushed so hard against it in the 1960s. It wasn't because marijuana was itself such a bad thing, but it was because that was the only way to deal with civil rights activists, anti-war activists who were exercising their First Amendment rights to protest, but they were smoking marijuana. So they went around and sort of went around the back door and took them down that way. COINTELPRO.
Interesting a history lesson. But as we've been pointing out, most Republicans support legalization now too.
That's been a big phase shift in the argument. You know, and this process goes back to, you know, we've had sort of libertarians like, you know, Barry Goldwater, for example.
The old joke is a libertarian is a Republican who wants to smoke pot. That was I used to hear that a lot.
That is absolutely true.
Here's a tweet from Karen. I am in the hiring field. You most likely won't be asked in an interview or application about drug use, but on the drug screen form, you'll have the opportunity to disclose. Always disclose and let the hiring company make the decision.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Good advice. Thanks for that, Karen. Okay, let's go to Emmanuel in St. John's. Emmanuel, thanks for holding.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning to you guys. I just wanted to speak against that marijuana legalization. And I think one of your guests said it's been disproved that it's not a gateway to substances abuse. Yes, it is. Marijuana is a gateway to substances abuse.
Why do you think that, Emmanuel?
And I have 12 witnesses of that. I have family that have dealt with it. They started with marijuana, and they had some issues. And I personally work in the mental health. And every patient that I see, chronologically, the problems that they have started from them starting with marijuana, and it cascades to major things. So I've seen that. Most of this client that we've seen, they get hooked to marijuana, they end up in a mental health, they diagnose them with bipolar, the schizophrenia. Some of them, they don't. It's just marijuana-induced psychosis. So we put in our society in danger, trying to advertise that this thing is good and we have to legalize it. The fear that I have now, right now, I work with the DJJ. I see the DJJ kids. We have multiple kids, teenagers, that they are dropping out of school. They're smoking marijuana in the bathroom. They're going to jail. They're stealing stuff. This thing impair your judgment. People have relationship issues because of that. It's causing a lot of issue than people are really assessing it. So my fear is the opioid crisis that we have right now, the marijuana legalization is going to be the same. In the near future, we're going to see how this legalization of marijuana is causing more trouble, like what we're facing, like the opioid crisis right now.
Okay.
So we got to really look in that way.
Emmanuel, thank you for the call. Okay. So, Sally, Emmanuel articulates all of the arguments that those opposed to this are concerned about. Let's talk about them, particularly worries that marijuana can impact mental health in some vulnerable patients.
I think most of the research I have read pretty much debunked that. Going to the gateway argument, let's all be clear. Marijuana is not harmless. It's just less harmful than other substances. That is, it is safer than alcohol. It's safer than all the other choices. And if you're talking about gateway drugs, alcohol is really, in my opinion, the most gateway, the most dominant gateway drug. And also, alcohol and nicotine prime the brain for response to the use of other drugs. And I think you also need to look at someone's socioeconomic place in their community when it comes to what types of drugs they're going to be affected and how those drugs are going to affect them.
Shelton.
Absolutely. He makes a bunch of compelling points, certainly, but it's kind of a chicken and egg thing. With the patients he's dealing with, particularly these juveniles, is the problem that they're using marijuana, or is the problem that they are free people in a free society making their own choices for themselves? There's always a case to be made that regulating freedom is itself the most important thing, because people can't be trusted, in theory, to make the right decisions for themselves.
What about juveniles?
Well, I think juveniles, number one, if you're a juvenile and you've got access to marijuana, you're not getting it legally. That's coming through the black market. And number two, I'd suggest that there are other problems going on. I mean, kids have been smoking in the boys' room since the days of Thin Lizzy, so that's not necessarily a new thing. My column this week talks about some of the allegations that have been made that marijuana does induce psychosis, that a kid killed his family with an axe back in the 30s downstate, and that was one of the things that kind of got this ball rolling. But the question is, does the drug induce psychosis? Certainly, if you're in the middle of an episode or having like a fugue state or a psychotic break, marijuana isn't necessarily going to help you. But I don't think it, anecdotally speaking, I don't think it induces anything so much as someone whose mind is already in that state goes there. It's like, do I buy Jaguar tickets because I'm a masochist, or do the Jaguars make me into a masochist? It's chicken and egg.
Okay. One more call. Daniel on the South Side. Go ahead, Daniel.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I'm actually really excited to be hearing this conversation and seeing it as so much more as part of the public forum. But I just wanted to respond to the last caller who was speaking a little bit. I think your guests have both talked about this, covered it pretty well, but I feel like that argument of marijuana as a gateway drug still kind of displays a fundamental misunderstanding of the knowledge or the nature of addiction. Excuse me. You know, like they said, marijuana isn't harmless, but the idea that that nothing else is going on and that the cause of the problem is the drug, I feel like is a bit dated and has been disproven by a lot of the current psychological research that's being done. Like I said, I think you guys have kind of talked about that a little bit already, but I think it's an important thing to address that the real gateway circumstances to addiction are, like one of the guests mentioned, they can be socioeconomic, they can be.
Yeah, lots of reasons why. And Daniel, I appreciate that call. Okay, lots of other folks online wanted to respond to that gateway drug argument too, and voice the same sentiments as Daniel. We need to get to a break, so can't get to everyone on hold, but thank you for engaging, and thank you to our regular contributors, Sally Kent Peebles and Shelton Hull. We will see you next month, because this is always a hot topic in Florida. Thanks for joining us.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Yes.
Speaking of which, Thanksgiving's coming up, and then Small Business Saturday, how you can shop small this holiday. We'll be right back.
Traditions, the big football game. Uncle Larry having one drink too many. Of course, somebody has to burn the rolls. And most importantly, the Snap Judgment Gratitude Special. You won't believe what we're thankful for this year. Snap Judgment, storytelling with the beat. Do not miss it.
Saturday afternoon at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
Join WJCT as we celebrate 20 years of America's Test Kitchen. To mark this occasion, WJCT is hosting an America's Test Kitchen recipe contest on Instagram. Calling all cooks, chefs, and foodies, pick your favorite America's Test Kitchen recipe, cook it, capture a pic of your dish, and share it to your Instagram page using hashtag WJCTTestKitchen. Visit WJCT.org/testkitchen for more information.
That sound means you're in the Electro Lounge, where fresh, down-tempo, chill-out, and new jazz music plays Monday through Saturday nights at 9 p.m., only on 89.9 FM WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, after you've eaten that Thanksgiving turkey and braved the Black Friday crowds, don't forget to shop small this weekend on Small Business Saturday. Bernie Dandridge with Florida Capital Bank is here now with a closer look at how shopping small can have a big impact. Hey, Bernie.
Hi, Melissa. How are you today?
I'm great. And thank you so much for being here. So
thank you.
Small Business Saturday has really taken off over Thanksgiving weekend. What kind of an impact does it make when we choose to shop small and buy our products from a local small business?
Wow. Well, that's a great, great question. And, you know, small businesses today are the lifeblood of every community. more people are employed by small businesses than they are by the big conglomerates or the big companies. And most people don't really realize that. They just think that, the big employers are the big companies, and they're not. They're mm-hmm. the small mom and pop, maybe 2, 3, 5, 10, 15 people companies. So you have to remember that, and you have to remember that patronizing them or going to their places of business for services and goods helps to circulate that money throughout the community. So the key to the answer to your question is the circulation of cash. So when you go and spend your dollars at whatever, it may be a local restaurant, maybe it's a local retailer or manufacturer, that money is going to be in turn invested in or utilized to buy goods and services with other businesses right there in your town. Not only the money that it took to manufacture or prepare the good, but even the net profits from it. So all that is circulated right there versus if you buy it from a big conglomerate, all those bottom line numbers go somewhere else to some other city or some other community. That's really important to know. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of positives behind working with local businesses. Local businesses really want to—
Which you do at Florida Capital Bank.
Yeah, we do. But what we want to say is that local businesses want to serve the local community, ultimately. If you work with if you go to talk to your local merchant and you have a certain need or a certain thing that you need, then they're probably going to figure out a way to serve that. I deal with small businesses every day, small to medium-sized companies. We do SBA and USDA B&I lending. But our company works with people who are in all stages of small business development. And it's really exciting to see those guys come from where they're at, which may be at zero, or it may be that they're years into their process, into their company. But it's exciting to see them grow, expand, and develop more. They hire more people, they invest more in local communities, they provide more goods and services. It's really a blessing to be able to work with those folks, and we have a lot of great stories about that.
Sure. Now, on Small Business Saturday, we're really encouraging everyone to shop local, buy some holiday gifts at a small business in this area, but you say there are other ways we can support small business besides holiday shopping, like hiring local service providers, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So that really revolves around making small businesses a part of your monthly or weekly activities. So if you're going to a restaurant, for instance, instead of going to Big Brand X every single time you go out, go to a local shop. Go try out a local business. If I can give a little advertisement here, we have a local client that just opened in Springfield, 1748 Bakehouse
and
in North Main Street.
By the way, I need to say, they are on a list we're going to unveil in just a few minutes.
Yay.
So, yes, they are a wonderful new small business.
Yeah, absolutely. And I went there and had lunch last week, and then I took my family and we went and had breakfast on Saturday. So these are two local entrepreneurs who are both chefs that are starting their company.
That's right. Now, Florida Capital Bank connects small businesses with capital and banking services.
Right.
There are lots of other small business resources here in our area, like the Small Biz Dev Center at UNF and others. But there's help out there for a potential small business owner, right?
Yeah. Let's talk about that for a minute, because this is super, super important. Every single client that I have, when I talk to them on the phone, I find that they are knowledgeable about certain areas. But then there's areas they know little about, and then there's areas they know nothing about. And to get them to a point where they can be long-term successful, we need to plug them into a great resource that's actually free. Mm-hmm. The Small Business Development Center in Jacksonville is supported by the SBA, but also by donations from the city,
at
the
UNF.
County, and the state, at UNF.
That's right. And
so
there's also
seek them out.
Seek them out. Give Bernie a call. Bernie Dandridge is with Florida Capital Bank, and shop local this Small Business Saturday. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Melissa. We really appreciate the opportunity to come.
And in a moment, where should you go when you shop small? Guess what? We are unveiling our first ever local holiday gift guide for everybody right after this.
Baptist Center for Bariatric Surgery wants to help change your life. If you've tried everything and still struggle with obesity, weight loss surgery could be your best option. Learn more at baptistjacks.com/weightloss or by calling 202-SLIM.
Clay Today reaches the heart of Clay County. Clay Today Print and Digital Products promotes businesses while providing local news and current happenings in Clay County. Information at claytodayonline.com.
A visit to the ER can get pricey, even for something pretty simple. Take, for example, this age-old problem. A kid sticks a toy up her nose.
I get one little pink shoe out, and I put it on the counter.
The other one was stuck in my nose, and my mom couldn't get it out.
And the bill?
I thought it was simply an error.
I'm Elsa Chang. We take a look at the case this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
On the next Fresh Air.
Okay, listen. I got something wrong with me. That's the first thing to know.
Edward Norton talks about his new film, Motherless Brooklyn, about a private eye with Tourette syndrome investigating corruption in New York City planning. And we'll talk about how the film relates to Norton's own life. He wrote, directed, and stars in Motherless Brooklyn. Join us today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Navy SEALs are among the nation's most highly trained service members. President Trump's intervention in one SEAL's case has opened a rift in the armed services, and the recently fired Secretary of the Navy is not going quietly.
What message does that send to the troops?
Well, what message does it send?
That you can get away with things.
A war of words over those who go to war. Next time on 1A.
Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, we're continuing to talk right now about Small Business Saturday. It's this weekend, and it's your chance to shop local and support small businesses here on the First Coast as you kick off your holiday shopping. Now, to that end, we have spent the last few weeks working like Santa's elves in our little workshop, scouting out the best locally made gifts across this area. And we are so excited to unveil it this morning. You can find all our picks, which cover everything from food to fashion to knowledge, even ideas for your pets. It's all online right now at WJCT.org. Just go there and check out Melissa's picks. Now, one of our local picks is the St. Augustine Distillery, and they have some ideas on how to have a very spirited holiday. Philip McDaniel is co-founder and CEO of the distillery and also co-founder of their new business, City Gate Spirits. Hey, Philip, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
And congratulations on the expansion of your business in St. Augustine, a whole new place now called City Gate.
Thank you, thank you. Yeah, we're real excited about it.
So great, because you're a perfect example of a small business in our area that has done well and provides an amazing product that's an alternative to going to a big box store. So as a business owner, this is going to be a really busy time for you guys.
It's jam time for us. And we're so grateful to, you know, to be doing what we're doing and making locally and supporting locally.
So what prompted the move to open up City Gate Spirits in addition to the St. Augustine Distillery?
Yeah, that's a great question. We saw an opportunity where we were missing, I think, a segment of the market, particularly in historic downtown. We got a beautiful piece of property right across the street from the Castillo, the fort, and it's right on St. George Street, and it's a different line of spirits, but equally fun and equally enjoyable.
That could not be a better location. Now, what advice do you have for small business owners? Because you have worked really hard, you and your partner, and had to deal with a lot of legislative stumbling blocks in Florida to distributing spirits. It's never easy when you try to get a business up and going.
No, I mean, I think that the main thing is, you know your niche, you know your customers and provide a great service and value. And if you do those things well, you know, and care about what you do, I think good things will follow.
Now, I want to make a shameless plug for visiting Philip's businesses, because if you come to the distillery, not only do you get to buy these great locally made products, you kind of get a cool tour as well, right?
You do. Yeah, at the distillery, we have a free, about a 40-minute tour, and you get to see our
stills, and you meet some wonderful people. You see our bottling line and see our barrels, and then the best part is you get to taste them.
That's right. Now, you brought some products with you, by the way. It's a little early in the morning to sample them, but let me just paint a picture for folks. In front of me is a bottle of apple pie moonshine from City Gate Spirits. Right. That sounds like the perfect holiday chaser, my friend.
Particularly as the weather temps start to get a little cooler, that little nice little crock pot with a little, some spices, nutmeg, it's great.
Okay, what else do you have over there?
So we brought products from both companies, actually. We brought a spiced orange rum, which one of my favorites because each of our spirits at City Gates feature local historic buildings. So this one actually has a Castillo on it. And then from the distillery, I brought one of our combo packs, which actually I think is being featured, which has a bottle of our rum and then our old-fashioned mix, which you can make the world's fastest batched old-fashioned. In literally 30 seconds, you can make 20 cocktails. It's pretty amazing.
Oh, my gosh. Perfect for a holiday bash with a big crowd. And yes, if you go to our website, wjct.org, the St. Augustine Distillery is on our curated list of local gift ideas this holiday season. It's Melissa's Picks. Search it at wjct.org and shop local this Small Business Saturday. If you're in St. Augustine, check out the distillery, and then also right there on St. George Street, Phillips' new business, City Gate Spirits, right across from the Castillo. It's just really exciting to see all the success, Philip, and I know it'll be a busy time for you guys. So thank you so much for stopping by, and have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Thank you, Melissa. You too.
Again, WJCT.org for our holiday gift guide. Shop local this weekend. That's our show. Thanks so much for being with us. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum directs the show. Our station news director is Jessica Palumbo. Bill Bortsfield is our digital editor. We always value your feedback. Keep those emails coming to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. And make sure to catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock. I'm Melissa Ross. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. We'll be off for the next couple of days eating some turkey and doing some local holiday shopping. And I hope to see you all out there as the holidays kick off. Have a wonderful, safe, and happy Thanksgiving weekend. We'll be back Monday morning.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.